Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Welcome to Way of the Dreamer with Robert Moss. This is the program where we affirm and celebrate the power of dreams, coincidence, and imagination to animate, juice, and orient our lives. I'm going to be interviewing myself today because the trickster came into play and a wonderful guest could not get through, and tricksters are often around when we talk about these things, and that reminds me to say to you, as I often say to myself, don't demonize the trickster. The trickster is there to make sure that plans do not go exactly as you expect. The trickster is there to prevent you from becoming monomaniacal about your need to go step by step into some programmed future and follow the events plan and color only inside the boxes. So the trickster is your devil if you get thrown too hard by the unexpected, the surprise that you don't initially welcome. But the trickster becomes an incredible ally when you're willing to flow with the changes, to turn around, to look in a different direction. And the trickster agency comes into play in many important situations in life. I'm thinking of the original story of Serendipity. Do you remember? It's in the Voyages of Sinbad the Sailor. Sinbad is trying to find this mythical kingdom of Serendip, which everybody would like to find, but nobody's sure where it is. It's not on any map. And in fact, Sinbad finds it only after he's sailed beyond the maps. Into the realms of probable sea monsters and dragons, here be dragons, and he's shipwrecked and he's lost his crew and he's washed up on an iron-bound shore that doesn't look friendly at all. And here he is, in the kingdom of Serendipity, where everything is great. Because he got off the map, he got off the chart, he got off the plan, and there he was. And in life, perhaps, you have found something like that. I've often found that something that seemed to be an unwanted delay or change in plan led to something good. Let's start with a moment of meditation, or if you like, high-octane visualization. It's a meditation which the friend I was going to talk to today loves. It's one that she learned from me and is teaching to others. So although she's not here to do it, in fact, the one who first did it, I'm going to give it to you. It's a meditation about living with heart and about strengthening the heart and finding medicine for the heart, imaginal medicine for the heart. So let's just think of it that way. You're going to be offered some imaginal medicine for the heart. So perhaps the way to approach this is to spend a moment just following the flow of your breath, gently, getting into a comfortable, relaxed position, following the flow of your breath, and as you exhale, you're letting go of anything that might be holding you back, any worries, anxieties. If you have major concerns, you'll come back to them later and you'll learn how to dream your way through, perhaps. But right now, you want simply to be present to a moment of expansion, of imagination, of opportunity. As you breathe in now, you're breathing in that sense of expansion, of adventure, of opportunity. Wonderful. You're going to put your hand on your physical heart for a moment. Why didn't you do that? I'm doing it too. Let's put our hand on our physical heart and perhaps feel some gratitude to this magnificent organ, which is also a brain. There is the intelligence of the heart physiologically as well as metaphorically. We might give a moment of thanks, of gratitude, to this wonderful organ that's kept us going for this long, through all the miles, right? All the disappointments, all the triumphs and disasters. Some gratitude towards the heart. A feeling perhaps how the heart is. And as you're staying close to your heart, feeling with your heart, you become aware there's some kind of motion in midair in front of you. It's very subtle to begin with. Now you're picking up a flash of color, and you realize there's a bird in midair in front of you. And its color is the color of your imagination. It could be vivid, jewel bright, emerald, ruby, sapphire. It could be less showy. It could be more brown. It's a hummingbird. And even if you live in a place where you don't see hummingbirds in nature, hummingbird is here for you right now, in your own space, in the space of your own imagination, your own soul space. Here it is. And you're watching this tiny bird and how its wings are beating, 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 ever so fast. And it's there, hovering in midair, and it must have an incredibly strong heart to be able to hang there in midair with all this beating motion. They say, you know, that the hummingbird has the strongest heart of any warm-blooded organism on our planet. Little bird of strongest heart. And you remember now, if you've seen it, how the hummingbird comes to drink from the heart of a flower. And you let your hand slide away from your chest if you're still holding your heart. And in this moment right now, you allow your heart to open like a flower. Might be a flower that you love. Might be a rose. Might be a lotus. Your heart is opening like a flower. And that little bird, strong of heart, is coming into your heart. It's his little tickle sensation. It's joining you in your heart. It's joining the strength of its great heart to the strength of your heart. You feel it with you. You feel its medicine with you. And you smooth your hand over your heart and hold it there. And you hold with you the medicine of the hummingbird. It's real medicine. Hummingbird has a great role in some mythologies and in some lines of curandero, medicinal practice amongst indigenous peoples who know the hummingbird well. Go into Maya territory, you'll find the hummingbird is very, very, very important. Well, you have with you now some hummingbird energy. May it keep you strong. Strong in your physical heart, in your body, and strong in your purpose, because we want to live a life with heart. And what this program and my work is really all about is supporting that. Supporting our ways of finding and living a life with heart, a life with soul. Let me tell you a story that brings in the theme of synchronicity, paired with the hummingbird. So some years ago, I was leading an in-person workshop in the old gold rush country of the Sierras in California, not too far from what they used to call Hangtown. And I didn't know this, but my facilitator had made flyers advertising the workshop, which was called Dreaming a Life with Heart. And she had put a photo on each flyer showing a hummingbird. And these flyers were on display at various places around town, including, you know, an organic food store, that kind of place, co-op. And when I opened the workshop, I asked people, as I usually do, what brought you here? Tell us your story. What got you to this workshop? And there were a couple there who could not wait to introduce themselves. They were breathless with excitement. The man said, well, I was in town doing some shopping, and I saw the flyer with the hummingbird. And I thought, I have to take this to my wife. He said he had gone through open-heart surgery, cardiac surgery, a few months earlier and was on the mend, but he found the image of medicine for the heart, imaginal medicine for the heart, very powerful, and he wanted to go and tell his wife about it. So he drives home with the flyer, and when he gets home and starts to get out of the car, there's a little whir of motion inside the car, and he turns and looks around and finds there's a hummingbird in the car with him. So very carefully, he closes the door and rushes to tell his wife, come, look, come, look. This is why we've got to go to this workshop. There's a hummingbird in the car. And the flyer says, it's all about medicine for the heart. So she comes out with him, perhaps a little alarmed that he is hyperventilating, and he opens the door and two hummingbirds fly out of the car. There are two hummingbirds. So they both come to my workshop. The two hummingbirds brought them. That's an example of how things like to happen together, as the Chinese say. I'm actually deeply convinced that the magnetism that is in work is at work in synchronicity, in the play of meaningful coincidence, is working all the time, and it's working not just for one person. It's working within the web of connection between all of us, between all animate beings actually on the planet. And who is to say that there is anything on the planet that is altogether inanimate? Quantum physics suggests that consciousness is alive in everything, and everything is pulsing with some degree of life, animation, consciousness. And synchronicity is that kind of moment, that special moment when the universe gets personal, and we can hardly fail to notice that something is up, that strings are being pulled, usually in a benign sense, but sometimes in a somewhat disturbing sense, that might lead across very far distances and connect people and things in very interesting ways. Well, I think I'm going to devote a good part of the rest of this show, this program, to talking about dreams in the most fundamental sense. You know that I'm keen on dreams. You know that I'm a dreamer. I think you must be too if you're joining me for this kind of program. I want to say this by way of general conceptual introduction of this point. After all that we've shared and all that I've written and said, people who are interested in dreams, people who might have theories about dreams, people who develop a practice of dreams, from philosophers and priests and yogis to ordinary people trying to get through the day and hold the family together, tend to look and lean in one of two directions. And in the East, this is very clear. In India, for example, you might say, oh, this approach to dreams is moksha-oriented, which means it's oriented towards spiritual liberation, towards getting beyond the bonds of matter, the limitations of the body, getting beyond the illusions of ordinary life to a plane of reality beyond illusion, perhaps a plane of luminous emptiness, if we're going to go all Tibetan Buddhist with this. So there's an approach to dreams which might value them as transitional experiences on the way to spiritual ascension and liberation. In other versions, slightly livelier versions, riskier versions, not necessarily altogether about liberation, it might be about enjoyment in the dreamscapes, in the dream worlds, which are understood to be perhaps illusory, but no more illusory than ordinary reality, and full of places of adventure, initiation, instruction, healing, entertainment, and delight, including the pure lands created by the Buddhas for their acolytes, their followers, to live after they've shuffled off one physical body. So there's the orientation which is looking beyond this world, either because this world is devalued and understood to be illusory and not worth getting penned up in and not worth being reincarnated in, or because it's understood that there are realms accessible through dreaming that are more interesting, more worthwhile, more transcendent, more challenging than ordinary reality. And then there's the other way of leaning and looking in relation to dreams, which in Sanskrit terms we could say the samsaric version. Samsara is the cycle of repetition. It is, if you don't feel good about being in this world in a body, it is the situation of being required to reincarnate again and again, caught up in body, caught up in matter, and this is frowned upon by the great ascetics and the great sages, of course. However, for most people in ordinary life, if you have a chance through dreaming to do better in the world of ordinary things, why not take it? So when you look east, just to continue this thought for a moment, you find that when it comes to popular discussion of dreams, popular reading of dreams, the dream tellers are very oriented, helping those who come to them to do better, to read the future in dreams, to see whether he's the right person to marry to your daughter or to marry yourself, to see how dreams can help you go through the doorways in the ordinary world. To generalize about this, we can say that dreaming might be felt to be a way to travel beyond the ordinary world, whether it's the road of spiritual ascension or the road of adventure and initiation. Or dreaming can be looked at as a set of tools and resources and contacts and connections which can help you to do better in ordinary life. Both ways of looking at dreams have been valued, sometimes by the same people. Sometimes people lean much more strongly one way or the other. But I would put it this way, to be as simple as possible. Dreaming is about soul, and it's about survival. Dreaming reminds us of our larger purpose. It shows us our condition, morally, spiritually, emotionally, mentally, and of course physically. It gives us access to realms and experiences beyond the physical world. It enables us to travel without paying for plane tickets or the fare on a train, without waiting for our luggage, without going through ordinary customs. So we might find there are checkpoints in the dreamlands because some of them are gated communities. And at the same time, sometimes with the same dream, but certainly in relation to this whole spectrum of dreams, at the same time, dreams are about survival. They can help us to get through. But when you look at cultures that value dreams very highly socially in terms of their ethos, you notice that sometimes people on the very edge of survival, for whom life is tough and fairly hard and resources are not that easy to find, they look to dreams for the clues that will help them do better or help them to help others do better. And in a society like that, like those of many indigenous peoples, for example, and of some modern societies. I think of Iceland, for example. Little Iceland, source of all the best, or many of the best, Norse sagas and dramas and pictures of gods, goddesses, giants, and trolls, and other hidden folk. And I think of Little Iceland, where people do a lot of dreaming, and how fishermen, famously, the most successful fishermen, have been guided towards the best catch, the best schools of fish available in the oceans by dreams, and how Icelanders turn to dreams to find out what the family on the other side of death is up to and what names they'd like, the ancestors would like to give to the baby coming through. So that's all about getting through in this world and this life, and perhaps you found this important yourself. And they're not disconnected themes. It's not practical to go through life bereft of soul, bereft of meaning, bereft of any sense of what your story is about. And that is the great fear that indigenous dreaming societies express and recognize when it comes to dream loss, dream drought, which is almost pandemic in our society. Although I did notice that during the pandemic, perhaps because they couldn't get around the way they used to, more of us started remembering and talking about dreams where we can travel without masks and without, as I say, paying for plane tickets. But in Western culture in particular, many of us are pretty bereft of dreams. And in indigenous dreaming traditions, this is regarded as a very serious condition because dreaming and soul are related. In fact, in the indigenous vocabulary for dreaming, the word for dream often has something to do with soul. For the Maquiritari of Venezuela, a dream is called an atacato, which means a journey of the soul, so it's right there. So the teaching in many indigenous cultures is that if you've lost your dreams, you may have lost an important part of yourself, a part of your vital soul, a part of your vital identity. And that's a serious condition because if there's a hole in you and you are not complete, then bad things might come in. You might succumb to addiction. You might succumb to the comings and goings of squatters, entities that don't even belong with you, because you're missing a chunk of yourself. So bringing your dreams back is a means of soul healing, of soul repair. And as you get closer to your dreams again, as you cuddle up with them, you sit by your inner fire with your dreams and give them some attention. And as you learn how to talk about them to other people in a way that makes others want to listen, all sorts of things are happening. You're becoming a better storyteller. You're bringing into your life, into the warmth of your inner hearth, and into the heart of the relationships that are going to deepen. You're bringing a sense of soul, a sense of a bigger story, a sense of purpose. And this is so important. This is one of the greatest gifts of dreaming. That's why I think that possibly the most important thing I've been able to do as one of those who would like to midwife the rebirth of a dreaming society has been to give people a way, a simple way of talking about their dreams and walking their dreams in the sense of taking action from them. We won't demonstrate this with another voice in this particular program, but I think many of you have heard me do this with guests on this show, and many of you have read about the process, and some of you have taken my classes where we do it all the time. We call it the lightning dream work process. I called it lightning because it's meant to be quick, and it's meant to harness energy in a, like a bolt of lightning, and it's basically a four-step game of sharing dreams or stories. It can be done with dreams. It can be applied to other experiences. You get, if you're the helper, you get somebody to tell their story simply and clearly, give it a title. You ask a few questions. You offer feedback in the correct way. You say, if it were my dream, if it were my life, offer your own projections and associations openly. You don't never tell people what their dreams mean. And then you go for action. All right, we might come back to talking about that after the break. You're listening to Robert Moss talking to himself and to you today on Way of the Dreamer.
Where can you find out about dreams and the dream world? MossDreams.com. At MossDreams.com, you can find out about Robert Moss, his work, and discover the way of the dreamer. Read numerous articles and essays on almost every facet of dreams. Find out Robert's class and workshop schedule. Read reviews and so much more. Visit MossDreams.com to find your way of the dreamer. That's MossDreams.com.
Robert Moss has a deep engagement with the dream world. And now you can take a crash course from this master of the act of dreaming at your own pace. That's right. You can get Robert's 8 exciting half-hour programs on a new DVD set called Way of the Dreamer. Share Robert's story as a dreamer and dream healer. This dynamic 3 DVD set can help teach you how to find your way through your dreams to realize your full potential. Don't wait to learn the practical dreamwork techniques that can help you understand how to attain better health, emotional stability, spiritual awareness, and more. Order Way of the Dreamer DVDs today from Amazon.com or MossDreams.com. That's MossDreams.com.
We're HealthyLife.net, reaching and helping a worldwide audience without hype, without shock, and without shenanigans.
Hi, this is Robert Moss. You're listening to Way of the Dreamer. Go up to mossdreams.com and see what's up. I'm offering a bunch of new online courses, including a short, punchy one for alternatives in London starting in January, which is a short 3-part course, The Power of Active Dreaming, which will qualify you if you need to fulfill the prerequisites to do my training for teachers of active dreaming, which is starting up with level one within the cycle in February. So you might want to look at that. And there'll be all sorts of other things that will be announced. So I teach dreaming on many levels. We're actually about to launch a level 4 of my training for teachers of active dreaming, which is not just for people who want to formally teach these things or lead workshops or circles. It's for people who want to empower their lives and enjoy the richness of being in an intentional family of creative spirits who like dreams and support each other's deepening practice and life odysseys. So check out mossdreams.com if you haven't been there recently. I was talking about how one of the things that we must do if we're going to become a dreaming society again, is we must learn and practice ways of sharing our experiences that are exciting, interesting, and socially rewarding. One of the reasons why dream work hasn't thrived in our culture is we haven't had sufficiently interesting, exciting, entertaining, energizing ways of talking about these things. If you're willing to share dreams and get feedback from other people, you're in trouble if it never gets beyond interpretation and analysis. Yes, there are mysterious things going on in dreams we might want to figure out. Yes, we might feel that a dream is speaking to us in a code that we need to decipher. And yes, we might need help with that from people who are more learned, more widely read, and more versed above all in dreaming than we are. But it's never sufficient and never right to reduce the lived experience of a dream to a text and then to an analysis and an interpretation in the course of which quite often the juice just runs away. The whole thing ends up desiccated, worse than dried fruit, just like the peel of a fruit without the flesh. We need to value and treasure the raw experience of dreams. Now, when I'm saying dreams at this point, I'm talking about a whole spectrum of experience. I'm talking about spontaneous sleep dreams, the ones we don't ask for, may or may not want, and may or may not find troubling. I have great, great respect for spontaneous sleep dreams. I mean, for one thing, they give us a witness perspective on our actions and attitudes in life. They allow us to see ourselves from an outside perspective. That can be hilarious. It can be humiliating. It can be stabilizing. It can be important course correction. Dreams of the night in that sense might compensate for our delusions of the day and set us right and set us clear. And all sorts of things are going on in our sleep dreams, of course, including glimpses of the future, because it seems, and many societies have understood this, it seems as if during the sleep of the body or the dormancy of the body, if you're in that in-between stage between sleep and awake, when the body is dormant, it seems that some part of soul or consciousness can travel. And it can travel in many ways, in many directions. One of the things that goes on is that a part of consciousness, a part of soul, may travel into the future, seeing what lies ahead. And it sees not only things that will happen, it sees what may or may not happen, depending on whether you read the information correctly and take action. So sleep dreams contain many, many things. And they include visitations from the ancestors, spirits of nature, other dreamers, gods, demons, and others. So there is a spontaneous sleep dream. There is the lucid dream in which you know that you are dreaming, and you might become lucid inside a normal sleep dream, or you might start out lucid in that hypnagogic state, the place between sleep and awake, and you might go on from there. Or you might become lucid as you're starting to surface in the morning. The morning hours, the hours around dawn, perhaps, when the sleeper is beginning to rise from the sleep experiences, have traditionally been valued highly by ancient and indigenous sages who've known what all of this is about, as a kind of God space, prime time for connection with inner and transpersonal guides, when we are more accessible, and when we've had enough industrial sleep to slough off whatever we did to our bodies the day before, we're rested enough to get fully into a lucid dream experience and retain its content. But I would also apply the word dream to other kinds of experience. I mean, the shaman's journey is a kind of dreaming, a kind of lucid dreaming. In meditation, if you don't simply throw away the images that rise and fall, but you pay some attention and perhaps select some as portals for an extended experience, I would say that some forms of meditation can be considered a form of dreaming. I would say, actually, that your experiences when you're walking this world, paying attention to what's going on around you, to the crackle of signs and symbols popping up in a dreamlike way, I'd say that walking this world is a way of dreaming with your eyes wide open and your senses aquiver, and you'll learn that as you become more open to what the world might be saying to you, it will speak to you in the manner of a dream, and you can harvest messages. So dreaming covers a whole range of experiences. I actually find when people are
sorely bereft of dreams. I mean, when they've lost their night dreams for a long period of time, and we might be talking decades or even most of a lifetime in some cases, the way to bringing back the dreams and bringing back the beautiful, bright dreamer, the part of soul that does the dreaming, the way back might be to encourage that person to pay more attention to synchronicity, meaningful coincidence, the dreamlike symbols and signs in the world around them. When we do that, sometimes it seems as if we open a spigot, we open a tap, and the dreams start trickling back or rushing back because it's all connected. What we see in the world around us and what we see of the other worlds are not homogeneously sealed from each other. They are connected, and they can interpenetrate, and they can spill over one way or another. So what have you been dreaming about recently? Here's a thought. Do you pay attention to the locations that you visit in your dreams? And are some of those locations places that you seem to go to again and again? Yes, they're recurring situations. Yes, they're recurring dreams. We might say more about that in a moment. But right now I'm thinking about location. Is there a certain house that you find yourself visiting in dreams again and again? Maybe it changes. Maybe you discover it has a different room or a different story, or the grounds are different. Maybe it looks a bit like a hybrid of houses you have known. Is there a city or a neighborhood you go to again and again? Is there a place on a hill or a headland that you go to again and again? Are you in a hotel again and again? Is it the same hotel or is it different? Are you at school? Are you in a palace? Are you in a cafe? Are you in a restaurant? And does this locale turn up more than once, again, again, again? Why am I asking? Because, you know, if you've been to a place in your dreams, just as if you've been to a place in ordinary life, you can go there again, right? You went to that supermarket, you went to that church, you went to that office, you can find your way again. It is the same thing in dreams, but there's more to it than that. Maybe those places that you visit in your dreams are places that have solid existence in another order of reality, and this could be as important to you as finding your way to where you will live and where you will train and where you will experience life after this life. On that note, we'll take another break. You're listening to Way of the Dreamer with Robert Moss.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. Visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com. MOSSDREAMS.com.
Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you are interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com. Get your personal dream symbols and discover the ones you dream about in Linda McKenzie's Symbols of You, a new book available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Target, and more.
You're listening to HealthyLife.net, the radio network that brings positive talk with positive change to make your world a little better.
You're back with Way of the Dreamer. This is Robert Moss. Before the break, I was talking about the importance of location in dreams. the realtors, the American real estate agents, say, location, location, location. Well, it's a good motto. It's a good mantra for dream workers, too. Location, location, location. Why? Well, one thing I suggested is if you can get the fairly clear picture of where you were in a dream, you can go there again. And this introduces one of the core techniques of active dreaming, which is my preferred name for my original synthesis of dream work and shamanism. Dream reentry means that you can go back into a dream you experienced and explore questions that you may have, follow further travel plans, plans for exploration. You might want more information from the dream. You might want to talk to someone you met in the dream. You might want to go beyond a closed door. You might want to face up to a fear. Dream reentry is the RX. It's the best remedy for scary dreams and nightmares, to be able to put yourself back in the space of the challenge, brave up to the challenge, face it, resolve it on its own ground, see what needs to be done in the dream space and maybe in waking life. That will actually stop bad dreams and nightmares in many, many cases. But as I say, the key to understanding dream reentry is very simple. I'll make the analogy again. You went to that restaurant for lunch. You visited that friend's house. You went to the library. You went to the bookshop. You could find your way to those places again because you were in them. Yes? Okay. Same with dreams. You remember you're in that hotel. You remember you're on that boat. You remember you're on that headland with a black dog running in and out of the water. You can go there again. You let the image become vivid on your inner screen. You decide, it's got to have some energy for you. Don't pick something that is just blah and boring. Pick something that's got some juice. I mentioned the black dog running in out of the water on the shore on that headland with that frame house with its wide verandas, and I can feel the breeze again from my dream. And I'm ready to go again, and I'd like to see whether the dog will let me swim out on one side of the headland. He didn't want me to go there last time. There's a story hanging there I need to understand more vividly. So I'm already, as I talk to you, halfway back inside a dream from recently in my life of a certain place, reminiscent of a place I knew in the area of the North Fork of Long Island of New York years ago. And I'm halfway there because the image is strong. It's the same for you. If you have a strong image from a dream, you can use that as your portal. Go back inside the dream, and if you're going to do that, you carry a question. My question, why does the black dog not want me to swim out on that side of the headland? And you have a travel intention. Okay, I'm going to go back there. I'm going to greet my dog. I'm going to pet my dog. I'm going to throw a stick for him, and then I'm going to find out, as I try to get in the water again, what is going on here. Where does that crossing lead to? So here's a technique, and this is why location is so important. You remember that place from your dream. You can go there again. But it goes beyond that. Adepts and initiates of the order of Dion Fortune, priestess of the Western Esoteric Way, wrote a book about what happens beyond death. I think it was called Through the Gates of Death. And she says that when you get to the other side after death, you'll find that most of the places around you are familiar. Why? Because you dreamed them. You went there in your dreams. She is absolutely correct. Death, the great multidimensional teacher, channeled by Jane Roberts, he said the same thing. You're going to find that the world of the interlife or afterlife, I'm playing with descriptions now, is very familiar because you have been in these places. You've rehearsed for the journeys you will make. You've checked out the Airbnbs, so to speak, and the hotels and the cottages and the residential and social possibilities. You're doing that at night. Any night of the week, you are quite likely to be moving amongst people who are dead to this world in the sense they don't have bodies down here anymore, but are very much alive somewhere else. And by the way, they will come and visit you, but you've had that experience. This is another of the aspects of dreaming that is so fascinating and so important. I'm thinking now of a Kwakyoko shaman in the Pacific Northwest who said, quote, dreams are the news the souls bring when they come back from their journeys. Dreams are the news the souls bring. So there it is again, the idea that soul, Ake Hulk Trunce, the great Scandinavian student of Native American law, talked about the free soul of Native American belief, the aspect of the self that travels beyond the body in dreaming. It has names in different cultures and different languages. So the free soul, the one that's not confined to the body, the Ka soul, K-A of the Egyptians, the aspect of soul that can travel in the astral body, to go Western esoteric or theosophist. That part of you goes traveling beyond the body in your dreams and, of course, in intentional states, in trance journeys, in shamanic expeditions, and it brings back news and it brings back information. And we have this ability. As a matter of fact, one of the things that we discover if we go on with all of this and continue to experiment and trust our first-hand impressions and share them with people who are willing to give priority to the authority of direct experience. Direct experience. You have to know these things through direct experience. And they're too important to rely on second-hand information. You absolutely must not get swamped and bogged down and trapped in conceptual understanding of these things. These things are too rich and too strong and too lively. So we're talking about lively arts, dreaming, active dreaming as it is practiced. And we've been talking most recently about the technique of dream reentry and the possibility that the places that you visit in your dream are places that have a certain solidity in other orders of reality and are maybe the architecture and geography of worlds beyond the present world, beyond this life, where you can live and travel and explore and learn and grow or be rehabbed and be treated to different perspectives on what matters, on who you are, who your soul family is, and what choices might lie ahead of you. You are scouting all of that, rehearsing all of that in your dreams on any given night, and of course you can learn as you become a more conscious dreamer to do these things with focused intention so that you can eventually rise perhaps to the level where you can step in and out of the different realms, different states of consciousness at will. And you might even find yourself headed for that continuity of awareness or continuity of consciousness, which is one of the ideals of the true dream yogi, the true practitioner of the yoga of sleep and dream, to be able to maintain continuity of consciousness between states of waking, dreaming, so-called dreamless sleep, which we must not understand, and the turiya, the fourth state, which goes beyond all of those. Continuity of awareness, be able to move to transit back and forth between those different realms of consciousness and realms of reality is the practice, is the aspiration of the adept, of the master. But it's interesting how much of it becomes accessible to us as every day and every night practice if we're willing to give it a go. And part of giving it a go is going to be to stop being frightened by things in your dreams you'd rather not look at, to use the dream reentry technique to go back into those places of challenge in the dream world and do what needs to be done. And another regular practice is going to be to spend more time in that twilight state between sleep and awake, where you are naturally very psychic, very intuitive, very capable of making creative connections that escape the average diurnal mind. So here we are on a path of limitless adventure. This is Robert Moss. You're listening to Way of the Dreamer. We'll be back with one more segment after the break.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. Visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com. MOSSDREAMS.com.
Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you're interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
This is Robert Moss. This is Way of the Dreamer. We're talking this time about many dimensions of dreaming, many opportunities that are open to us in dreaming. And some of what I've been saying really goes back to the oldest, and for me, still the wisest understanding of what's going on when we dream. Probably the oldest understanding is that dreaming is traveling. We travel beyond the body and the brain. We see things across time. We see things across dimensions. We enter a field of interaction with beings other than human and with the ancestors, with the departed. And we receive visitations. The dreaming is traveling. We make visits. We receive visitations. I remember when I was dreaming of an ancient woman of power, an Arundhiwana, a woman of power of the Iroquoian tradition. She was born Huron. Adopted Mohawk, became the mother of the wolf clan of the Mohawk people, the Kanyakahaka, about 250 years ago. When I was dreaming of her and found the ways to translate her archaic Mohawk speech, she would never speak to me in anything but her own language. As I wept on this and got deeper and deeper into it, I talked to an elder of the Confederacy of the Six Nations, which includes the Mohawk, the Confederacy of the Haudenosaunee. And he said to me, very simply, you made some visits and you received some visitations. There it is, the old understanding. How was it possible that I am dialoguing with Devatakwas, who I called in English Island Woman, the woman from the island, that's the Mohawk name for the Huron people. How is it possible that I am dreaming with her across 250 years of time and across dimensions, and it's as if she is talking to me as a master shaman might be able to do from her time, from her now time, because she wants information from her future, and she's come to me. How is it possible this is going on? Well, dreaming is traveling. Dreaming is traveling. And when we go dreaming, we step beyond the laws of the Newtonian universe. We step beyond the laws of old physics, we step beyond the body and the brain, and we have access to an immensity of experience and knowledge. Actually, when we think about knowledge, we could say that we have access to the whole field of non-local mind. But of course, our ability to bring from that and to do anything with it depends upon our preparation, our intellect, our knowledge in certain specialized areas, or lack thereof. There's a period in my dreaming. I was dreaming very frequently of ideas and concepts from physics, which I could not understand conceptually at all, even though I was reading and studying, thinking about Wolfgang Pauli, the quantum pioneer, Jung's friend, intensely at the time. But I don't have much of a head for maths or theoretical physics, so I was aware, though I would write down some titles and sometimes be given images I could draw, I was aware that my ability to access, hold, and apply a lot of this was going to be very limited. I do better with foreign languages, even though I'm a lazy linguist. I am forever dreaming in other languages, and sometimes I bring back some key words, some quick key phrases, and doing due diligence, doing the research on the words and phrases I've been given, turns up remarkable things. An example. Well, let's stay with the Iroquois for a moment. Ondinonk. I couldn't find the word amongst contemporary Iroquoian speakers, but I found it eventually. It's an old word, Ondinonk. I found it eventually in a report from a black robe missionary, a Jesuit missionary in Huron country, in a bitter winter in the 1640s.
And he wrote to his superiors that among these savages, the Ondinunk is considered to be the most important thing that goes on in dreaming. And what is the Ondinunk? The Ondinunk, he explained to his superiors, is the secret wish of the soul as revealed in dreams. And the practice of these savages, he reported, is to gather around a dream and listen to the dream and try to figure out what the soul is asking for. What is the wish of the soul? What is the desire of the soul? And then the responsibility of the community is to accommodate the dreamer's wishes, the soul wishes, so that the soul does not become disappointed or disgusted and take leave of the dreamer's body. Wow. This goes deeper than anything I'd learned from Western psychology about what's going on with dreaming, though you could find analogs. You can go Freudian with it. Say it's all about suppressed desires that are now surfacing. Or you could go large with it and say, well, it's actually about the larger purposes of the individual, things that transcend the agendas of the little everyday mind, of the ego, etc. Anyway, we are hearing something really quite remarkable. And when I had the word, I had a grip, I think, on the slippery slopes of an indigenous tradition of dreaming, healing, and getting through, because for the Kanyenka Haka, the Mohawk people, dreaming was also very much about survival. I mean, the dreamers were the scouts. They're the ones that see where the enemy war party was lying in ambush, or where an enemy party might be about to descend on the village. They were the hunters. They'd go out to find the deer before the hunting party went out, and then the hunting party would follow the trail from the dream, often guided by the dreamer with the aid of the wolf, the crow, the raven. And the hunting party would then follow the trail the dreamer had laid and kill the deer that the dreamer had seen taken at that site. And if the dreamer's information was obscure or inaccurate, then the dreamer lost credibility. So you had to deliver. It wasn't about wishy-washy New Age stuff. It was about delivering the goods. You'll find the deer over that mountain, in that stand of blue spruce. That's where you'll find them. You'll find them there at sunrise tomorrow. Get over there. So once again, dreaming is about survival, and we have a great deal to learn from the earliest dreamers whose tracks we can trace, the early dream shamans. By the way, shamans versus dreamers. Something to know, which not enough people realize, is that in the indigenous languages of North America, the standard word we translate as shaman actually means dreamer. In Mohawk, it's Radzentsots. Radzentsots literally means one who dreams, implying, or actually carrying the sense that this is a person who could shift consciousness, go into the dream world at will. This is a person who can serve soul, guide soul in dreaming, souls of the living, souls of the dead. This is a person who can scout the future in dreaming. Nutchin, among the so-called Beaver Indians of the Dunedin of British Columbia, Nutchin is their word. Nutchin also means dreamer, one who dreams, the word for the shaman. And their shamans are supposed to be able to fly very fast. They're supposed to be very gifted and quick messengers. They're supposed to be able to fly in the form of swans and other birds. They're swan dreamers. Swan is a very important bird for that culture. So, you know, what is the shaman? Well, what is the dreamer? Well, I would suggest that although shamanism might involve the purchase or the transfer of authority from one old practitioner to another, it might involve hallucinogenics. The heart of real shamanism, the central art of the true shaman, is dreaming, being able to step in and out of the different worlds at will and do some good that applies to a community. All right, you've been listening to Way of the Dreamer with Robert Moss. We'll be back to say Dream On after the break.
Thank you. Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you're interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. Visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com. MOSSDREAMS.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Well, I hope you enjoyed today's show. It was unexpected that I got to talk to you in this loosey-goosey way, alone with you. I enjoyed it. I hope you did too. And let's remember again, when the trickster comes into play, be ready to turn on less than a dime. As we go forward on the roads of life and the roads of soul, may you live your best dreams and may you remember them.